It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. In April of last year, then-Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto unveiled a plan under which the region's nonprofits could contribute to help fund social service, affordable housing, and environmental initiatives. The funds would be directed to a new nonprofit called OnePGH. A few weeks later, Peduto lost the primary election to Ed Gainey. Now, a few months into a new administration, does Ed Gainey intend to follow through on OnePGH? Reporter Charlie Wolfson has covered that for Public Source. Charlie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, Charlie, is there a simple answer to that? Does Mayor Ed Gainey plan to move forward with OnePGH?
There's no simple answer, but the slightly longer answer is that they're keeping it alive. They've appointed their own people to its board, but they're not going to use it for the primary purpose that Peduto had in mind, which was getting major nonprofits to pay a lot of money for city projects.
Now, the OnePGH model that Peduto outlined, was that all that common? Other cities do it that way with large nonprofits or what? What have you learned?
There are things like OnePGH, a nonprofit that kind of works alongside a city government. New York City has one example. But as far as using it to collect payment in lieu of taxes from major nonprofits, the researchers I spoke to said that they're not aware of anything like that.
Bill Peduto first proposed the idea, not the unveiling of the plan, but in April of 2018, and he had said he had hoped to unveil full details in about 6 months after that. I spoke with him on the Confluence in September of that year about OnePGH, and he told me that the idea came together after extensive talks with the major nonprofits, including UPMC, AHN, the universities.
What we are doing is responding to what their concerns were. They were not interested in supporting a pilot that would just go into a city budget. Payment in lieu of taxes that would just go into a city budget. They wanted to combine mission, where they're looking at ways that they can be partners in helping Pittsburgh to be successful at the same time, looking at what the critical needs of the city are.
Now, through Peduto's OnePGH, UPMC, Highmark, University of Pittsburgh, CMU had committed, I believe it was $115 million over 5 years. How does that, Charlie, that figure, compare to the amount these entities save in taxes?
Yes. So in terms of property taxes, if you looked at what they, if they were not tax exempt, what they would have to pay to the city, to the county, or to all the municipalities, to the county, to all the school districts, $115 million over 5 years is about a fifth of what they would be paying in property tax. So it's much lower.
Okay. And a note, nonprofits own 20% of the property in the city of Pittsburgh, and it is, as you say, tax exempt. So to clarify, OnePGH is a nonprofit itself under Peduto. That $115 million wouldn't come to the city. What's happened to that $115 million then?
Yeah, so there are a lot of questions about, what that $115 million even was at the beginning. A lot of people I've spoken to recently say that a good portion of that money was in projects that were already happening independent of OnePGH. Some of it's basically said, details to come later. And there have been essentially no announcements about this since that first announcement before the election last year. And when I followed up with these four major nonprofits, recently, they said we're still committed to giving back to Pittsburgh, but they would not say any specific OnePGH adjacent projects that they're going forward on.
So you reached out to them to get comment. Now, for years, some nonprofits have made payments in lieu of taxes meant for city services such as public safety. Does Mayor Ed Gainey prefer to negotiate larger payments directly so that money comes to the city coffers by these nonprofits instead of going to a nonprofit for social service programs?
That is certainly their priority. They'd rather have the money come directly into their budget. Former Mayor Peduto, his assessment was that he couldn't get the nonprofits to do that, but Mayor Gainey is clearly at least trying to make that happen. They're having negotiations right now with UPMC and Highmark. They're refusing to give really any other information about those meetings other than that they're happening, but we'll just have to wait and see how that turns out for them.
Then Mayor Luke Ravenstahl actually filed a suit against UPMC about this, their tax exempt status. And when Peduto became mayor, he dropped the suit because UPMC had countered suit, saying you're just targeting us. What about the rest of them? I asked Ed Gainey about that last month on the Confluence, and he talked about the negotiations you're referring to, but he wouldn't say one way or another if the lawsuit was still on the table, although as a candidate, he was very strong about it.
Yeah, this was one of his top issues during the campaign. But even after he won the primary, he would not go into specifics, maybe to keep all his options on the table. But the lawsuit, you know, former Mayor Peduto certainly seemed to think it was not worth pursuing. He withdrew it, but certainly it's an option for Gainey.
So if the Gainey administration prefers direct payments from the big nonprofits to the city, but still might keep one PGH, who or what would provide the funding for one PGH?
You know, that's really unclear. I spoke with Deputy Mayor Jake Pollock about, you know, the future of one PGH, and he said they're keeping it alive. It may have purposes that the city needs a nonprofit to do that the city itself can't do, but he did not really say, you know, specific examples of what they hope to use it for. So that's really unclear at the moment.
And briefly, Charlie, what's next in your reporting as you follow the Gainey administration, nonprofits, and even finances?
Well, we're trying to find out about how payment in lieu of tax programs work with UPMC. They have programs in Altoona and Erie that they pay those communities. So we're looking to find out how those communities accomplish that and what it might mean for Pittsburgh.
Charlie Wolfson is Public Sources local government reporter. Charlie, thanks so much. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Mary Lee Williams. Over the last 2 years, summers have looked very different in Pittsburgh. The typical slate of events got either migrated online or just canceled because of the pandemic. And while COVID-19 is certainly still a concern, some events are coming back. Bike Pittsburgh is the bicycle and pedestrian advocacy organization in Pittsburgh, and it's returning with a full slate of programming this summer, the first of which starts at the end of this month. Also, it's the organization's 20th anniversary. Kaya Joseph is the director of events at Bike Pittsburgh. She joins me now. Kaya, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, Kaya, there's a lot happening this summer, but let's start with Open Streets. For those that aren't familiar with the event, can you describe it?
Absolutely. So Open Streets is actually inspired by a global movement where we are reclaiming city streets to give the space back to people for a day, let them experience what that space could look like or feel like without motor vehicles, without car traffic.
So there's going to be three Open Street events, May 29th, June 26th, and July 30th.
Correct.
So what streets are going to be open this summer?
So the May event is coming up first. It's our shortest route, but it's going to run from Market Square. The Market Square will be closed, Forbes Avenue leading out towards the south side, through the Armstrong Tunnel, across the 10th Street Bridge, and then down East Carson up until the Birmingham Bridge. You can explore all that car-free space, ride through the tunnel without cars in it. The Southside Business District always comes out in full force for these events. So they'll have all sorts of sidewalk sales and activities, and just shops will be open. People can come out and have a good time.
Yeah. So it's not also just that people can be in the street. There's like events. What kind of events are you going to have?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm probably skipping right over our own programming. Bike Pittsburgh offers three activity hubs along the route. So there will be a health and wellness hub in Market Square where there will be free fitness classes. You can jump into a free class. They'll be starting on the hour all through the event. provided by the YMCA. There will be also lots of other partners in the health and wellness area kind of sharing what they have to offer with the community. We will have a second hub area which is the Kids and Family Hub. That is going to feature a Learn to Ride course where younger kids or people who don't know how to ride a bike yet can experience some mild obstacles, get some help with balance, proper helmet fit, all that good stuff. And then we will also have an Arts and Culture Hub, which will feature some musicians, some performances from dance groups.
So you're an advocacy organization. Bike Pittsburgh is an advocacy organization. What does having these open street events do to kind of help you reach that goal of improving cycling and pedestrian experiences in Pittsburgh?
This event is demonstrative. So it shows people what that space could be like, what things could feel like, if only there wasn't so much of that space dedicated to car traffic. If there was more thought put into designing a space for humans, opening it up, not having as much car traffic passing through, you really get a vibrancy and a level of people-centered spaces is what we're going for with open streets, letting people feel those people-centered spaces. And then ideally, they want to join us and help fight for them.
People-centered spaces. Yeah, do you get a lot of people kind of in awe of what's happening when they walk into a street and it's just a street and it's not cars?
Yeah, and they don't have to feel afraid or they don't have to be looking over their shoulder. We've had several people kind of bring their kids out. This is their first experience like riding on a road without having to be like called back frantically by their parents. And so it's just a lot of joy that you see on the streets.
So as we mentioned, there's also other programs that are happening this summer. There's also Bike Anywhere Week. Is this meant to encourage people to try out riding a bike somewhere? Kind of what's the purpose of this event or this week of events?
So Bike Anywhere Week was actually a pandemic pivot for us, as they say. We usually run Bike to Work Day, which is the Friday of that week. But when people weren't biking to work, we kind of were like, okay, well, what else can we do on this week to encourage people to get out there, try riding bikes? We have a couple departments at Bike Pittsburgh, so each department has taken charge of putting on an activity a day for Bike Anywhere Week. All of the information on that is laid out on our website, bikepgh.org/anywhere.
So that's going to be the week of May 20th?
Yeah, May 16th through 20th.
So you also mentioned the Confident City Bicycling Class.
Yeah.
Biking in Pittsburgh can seem intimidating to people.
Because it is intimidating.
So have you seen or are you hoping to see some increased interest in a class like this? Because we know during the pandemic, bike stores were selling out of bicycles. Parts were delayed for weeks or months. So are you hoping to see more people out kind of exploring how far they can take cycling in the city?
Yeah, absolutely. So the bike boom, which is what we're calling it, the bike boom, that is still ongoing. Folks are still sold out of things. Suppliers are still having issues getting certain types of models back in stock. So the bike boom is not going away. And we've sort of begun a bit of outreach. We've already found a lot of people who are like, I picked this up during the pandemic. I'm here at this class because like, I don't actually know anything. The last time I rode a bike was I was 12 years old. So kind of getting back into the swing of things, learning how to bike on street, in the city, do it with a group.
So, and then finally, kind of to round out the summer, you have Pedal PGH, which is, you know, the huge bike ride that happens throughout the city, varying levels of experienced riders, varying lengths of rides, family friendly also, if people want to bring out their kids. So it's happening on August 28th. Last year, the ride happened without the typical celebration at the end. It was kind of a go at your own pace, along with the stops on the way with food and, you know, water and bike maintenance for cyclists. What will Pedal PGH look like this year?
We are so excited to be able to bring back the Finish Line Festival and have that celebratory element. So yeah, Pedal Pittsburgh is coming back in its full form. We will have the Finish Line Festival. There will be food trucks, and Straub always provides some beer for our riders, which is appreciated after a long ride. There will be rest stops along the way. Like you said, varying difficulty levels so people can tackle whatever they feel with, if they want a challenge, or if they just want to do an easy ride on a summer day. There's options for everyone. And it's a ride, not a race.
I mentioned at the top, this is Bike Pittsburgh's 20th anniversary. Your organization was founded in 2002. How is Bike Pittsburgh recognizing this 20th anniversary?
We are celebrating this year by just, you know, blowing it out with the full events season, which is one a big feat on its own, but then we're also adding some fun new stuff to the mix. We're having a 20th anniversary party later this year. So September 24th, mark your calendars. There used to be something called the Bike Fest parties that happened in Pittsburgh, and we haven't had one in a while. So I'm feeling like this is going to be the year to have that Bike Fest style party. So the 20th anniversary party is going to be modeled after that.
What is a Bike Fest party?
It's just a whole lot of people who like bikes, partying, dancing, you know, having some drinks. There will be games and activities, bike themed, of course. Come out and have a good time. All of the specifics on that will be released a little later in the summer.
Kaya Joseph is the Director of Events at Bike Pittsburgh. Kaya, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you so much for having me. We'll see you at Open Streets.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. Republican candidates for governor spent less than 15 minutes during recent televised debates talking about energy and environmental issues. Climate change was barely mentioned. Even though the most recent international climate reports say greenhouse gas emissions must be cut immediately to avoid the worst effects of climate change, those vying for the GOP nomination said they want to ramp up fossil fuel production. State Impact Pennsylvania's Rachel McDevitt reports on where the candidates stand.
14 years ago, it was a big election year. Global demand pushed gas prices to more than $4 a gallon, and Americans were clamoring for energy independence. Those are chants from a 2008 John McCain campaign rally in Michigan. Since then, landmark reports on climate change have linked human activity to warming. We've marked the hottest years on record and seen devastating wildfires and floods. And in part because of Russia's war with Ukraine, gas is back up to more than $4 a gallon.
Drill, baby, drill.
You know what we can do for Pennsylvania workers? Drill, baby, drill.
And we're going to open up our fracking like you wouldn't believe it.
That was, in order, former Congressman Lou Barletta, conservative activist and columnist Charlie Giroux, and State Senator Doug Mastriano during recent debates broadcast by PCN and ABC 27. Positions on energy and climate among the 9 GOP hopefuls vary only a little. All say they want to boost the state's energy sector to increase jobs and make the country more energy independent. Giroux says energy jobs create prosperity for all Pennsylvanians.
That means natural gas, coal, nuclear, wind, and solar. Not to the exclusion of any of them. We can be all of those things.
Giroux stands a bit apart from the rest in his all-of-the-above strategy. Even as big automakers have announced plans to go electric and fossil fuel giants are investing in alternative fuels, most candidates are focused on increasing natural gas production and exporting gas to other states and around the world. Montgomery County Commissioner Joe Gale says he would do away with any regulations that would hinder the natural gas industry and encourage more pipeline development.
Wind power, windmills, electric vehicles is not the solution. That's just politics. We need to fix the problem, and we can do it by tapping into our natural gas industry.
Mastriano, a retired Army colonel, says it's in our national security interest to increase fracking. He's also promising to dismantle Democratic Governor Tom Wolf's climate efforts, including joining the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative.
You know, we're blessed. It's time to remove Wolf's regulations on day one. We're out of Reggie on day one.
Businessman and former pipe fitter Dave White says he wants to see more pipelines built along interstate right-of-ways.
That's how you get economic development across this whole state. It'll take it down to the southeast where we have rivers and we have ports. We can expand that.
Barletta agrees there needs to be more of an effort to move the gas from wells to refineries.
But we have to build the pipelines. Having all this natural gas under our feet without building the pipelines is like being in college and having a keg of beer without a tap.
Cardiothoracic surgeon Enche Zama says he wants the Commonwealth to be number one in clean energy and clean energy research, but he says the tech isn't ready for prime time yet. He would focus on three things.
One, the economy. We can grow it. We have tremendous resources. Two, humanism. People need affordable energy and reliable energy, and we have that beneath us. Number three, the security imperative.
Former Congresswoman Melissa Hart says more gas drilling could help revitalize small towns.
You're going to see prosperity across the state, not just in the energy industry, but also more opportunities in small towns where we have people experienced in manufacturing and can rebuild.
It's not necessarily red tape that's holding back drillers. Drilling companies already own leases in Pennsylvania that they aren't using. More drilling would have a limited effect on prices, which depend on many global factors. As to the prosperity argument, the gas boom took off in the state more than a decade ago. Some communities have benefited from millions of dollars in impact fees, but many reports reveal people suffering health effects from nearby drilling. Senate President Jake Corman is also focused on manufacturing. He says we'll be using fossil fuels for decades and decades to come.
If you want to improve the environment, bring manufacturing back to Pennsylvania so we can use our natural gas, which is a much cleaner fuel.
Former U.S. Attorney Bill McSwain says more fracking is the most important thing the state can do to get its economy moving.
The reduction in greenhouse gases that we've seen over the last two decades have almost all been because we're burning cleaner fuels and natural gas. So if you care about the environment, you want to frack more.
Natural gas does burn cleaner than coal, and the switch to cheaper gas over the past decade has reduced power sector emissions. But burning natural gas still releases carbon dioxide emissions. More burning equals more emissions. And methane leaks are a big concern. The main component of natural gas has a much higher warming power than carbon dioxide.
I've spent my life taking on the big and powerful on behalf of those who've been wronged.
Attorney General Josh Shapiro is the only Democrat running for governor. In a statement, he said he wants to invest in clean energy and clean transportation, adopt the 2020 grand jury report recommendations to minimize health hazards from fracking, and plug the estimated 200,000 abandoned oil and gas wells across the state. All of those would be difficult without the support of the legislature, which is now controlled by Republicans. Rachel McDevitt, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, the YMCA of Greater Pittsburgh has appointed its first ever woman president and CEO. We visit with Amy Harrelson Kinley. Thanks to our team, Nick Konopka, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.